I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from Dubai in the UAE. It may be the beginning of April, but today we're wondering if Australia recently announcing a deal with the USA and UK to spend billions on nuclear submarines to fight a war with its biggest trading partner, China, was an early April fool. China says Australia is walking further down the path of danger. So how did it come to this? How could it ever benefit Australia to fire missiles at their closest business partner in maybe 20 years' time, while amidst spiralling poverty at home, subsidising US arms companies already profiting from the war on Russia through Ukraine? Can it be stopped? Joining me from Canberra to talk AUKUS is Ambassador Tony Kevin, senior foreign policy advisor and Australian diplomat for decades. Thank you so much, Ambassador, for coming on. I think we have a few sound issues. Don't know whether that's because of Pine Gap. I'll get to that in a moment. But just in the past few days, the National Centre for Social and Economic Modelling in Australia said 1 million in just New South Wales are in poverty, 100,000 more than 2016, and that's on top of other reports. Why would Australia threaten its biggest trading partner, China, with nuclear submarines?
Rafshin, thank you for inviting me onto the program. It's a very good being here. To answer your question, Australians have always relied on great and powerful friends, two great and powerful white friends in particular, Britain and the United States. We began as a penal colony of Britain 240 years ago, shortly after America declared independence from Britain. We've always had great difficulty in not believing in the regularity and the honour of our great and powerful friend Britain, and increasingly since the 39-45 war, the United States. So I think that's the first background answer to your question. We've been struggling, if you like, to find a home in the Asia-Pacific region over the last 40 or 50 years. But somehow or other, the siren call of Washington and London keeps pulling us back. And unfortunately, with our present Prime Minister, who's a decent man, I don't think he's the malign figure that his predecessor, Scott Morrison, was. He is a decent man, but he's got a limited vision of the world. And he automatically wants to think well of our great and powerful friends.
I mean, obviously, Scott Morrison would say he's not malign. And as for Albanese, we shouldn't even perhaps focus on him because it's bipartisan, as is often emphasised in Washington. As, I don't know, on small stations in Connecticut, they're celebrating the amount of investment from Australia de facto in their military-industrial complex, arguably at the expense of the Australian taxpayer. Why is it so bipartisan? I mean, they must understand that the United States trade comprises less than 5%, 3.5%, and Chinese trade is more than 25%.
Well, Australians are sentimental about allies. They're sentimental about big Navy ships carrying the British or the American flag. They like uniforms, the uniforms of our friends.
Some Australians, we should say.
Well, most Australians, unfortunately. Most Australians who are pretty naive about foreign affairs, they're leery of China. You know, old nursery, if you like, bogeys come into play where China's concerned, Fu Manchu and so on. And unfortunately, we've gone down the wrong path. We allowed American advisors to become very prominent in our defense departments. We've got quite a number of American admirals on almost permanent secondment to our Department of Defense. Their influence is pervasive and widespread. They managed to persuade Morrison to destroy what was a reasonably good deal with the French, to the fury of President Macron. They replaced it by a very bad deal with America. And Albanese, when he came into office, held on to the advisors who had advised Morrison on this matter. He didn't get rid of them. He should have. And now it's all coming home to roost. Very surprisingly, there is a backswell against this now, which was started by particularly former Prime Minister Paul Keating, but also by an extremely brave and capable editor of an independent online journal, Pearls and Irritations, John Menadue, a former Secretary of Prime Minister's Department, former head of Qantas, former ambassador to China. And he has encouraged almost single-handedly a very lively critical debate on this decision. The government tried to basically present it as a fait accompli, something that was axiomatic and didn't require any debate. But now the debate is happening. Just in recent days, it's developed a head of steam, with former Foreign Minister Gareth Evans weighing in a very effective way, fleshing out some of Paul Keating's criticisms.
Yeah, Paul Keating said the worst international decision by an Australian government since Billy Hughes tried to introduce conscription. Of course, Australia supported the invasion of Vietnam by the United States. On mainstream media, so-called mainstream media in Australia, Keating is referred to more or less as a Chinese spy. Is that the state of debate in Australia, that it doesn't matter if Indonesia and Malaysia, your neighbours, are against it? Keating is basically some sort of Chinese front. That's how I heard it being discussed in your country.
It's pretty childish and pretty personal. They either say things like that or they say that Keating is approaching senility and has lost the plot, which is completely ridiculous, and man, it's as sharp as a tack. But I mean, Gareth Evans fleshed it out in some pretty important ways when he said, what we are doing is surrendering our sovereignty and surrendering our capacity to take decisions in Australia's national interest in an irreversible way if this goes ahead. We're simply going to be sucked in as America's, I speak for myself now, I'm not using Gareth's words, we're simply going to be sucked in as America's proxy warrior in Asia. America's Ukraine in Asia, which basically can be used and expended as necessary. It's extremely worrying.
Well, Australia is a kind of new Ukraine.
Yes. Yes, well, gullible and swayed by this belief that America will stand by us and America will protect us. The parallels are pretty scary, actually.
In fairness, Britain always says that it has an independent nuclear deterrent, despite criticism that it has technology controlled by Washington. What about the non-proliferation treaty? I mean, nuclear states, Britain and the United States supplying weapons-grade enriched uranium to a non-nuclear Australia. Does that mean, I don't know, China, Russia can supply weapons-grade enriched uranium to Iran? What sort of precedent does it set?
A very bad precedent, obviously. There's also the issue of we're supposed to dispose of the nuclear waste from these submarines.
Any plans on how to dispose of the nuclear waste?
No plans at all. She'll be right, mate. I think that's the attitude. We'll find a way to muddle through. We have a history of Maralinga British atomic testing in Central Australia, of letting ourselves be used by Britain as a convenient piece of real estate for whatever they might want to do, which they don't wish to do at home. And we don't seem to learn from that history, unfortunately.
There is also that history of a coup, effectively, in your country in the 1970s, when you did have a leader who opposed US foreign policy and wanted to nationalize mines and thought about removing the military bases, the United States military bases. I understand Gough Whitlam once said World War III could begin in Australia and no one would know it. At the moment, there is no real opposition to all those US bases, Northwest Cape, Pine Gap, Narangba, just a few of them. The CIA base there, apparently, supplied from Guam. No real talk about it in the Australian media, this control of Australia by the United States?
Not really. We've taken refuge in the myth that these are, quote, joint facilities, unquote, that we have a say in their command and control. It's not true. We don't. And in fact, there was a story that the night before the word went out to remove Whitlam, he had announced to his colleagues a decision to ask America to close down the Pine Gap station near Alice Springs, which played a key role in triangulating and controlling really American satellite flights in the sky, which were involved in the targeting of nuclear missiles against Russia if World War III ever started. So Pine Gap has always been extremely important and continues to be extremely important. But it's got worse than that now. We actually have permanent rotational basing, rather Orwellian phrase, permanent rotational. There are always American B-52 bombers sitting at an airfield in Northern Australia now. Whether they're nuclear armed or not, we don't know. We can assume that they probably are, at least some of the time. And they're there all the year round. There are something like 2,000 American Marines who permanently rotate through Australia, through Northern Australia. So it's a bit like the boiling frog. It was started by Labor Prime Minister Julia Gillard. But step by step, Australia's become part of the American war-making machine in Asia. And this has nothing except remotely to do with the defence of Australia. It's simply about Australia becoming completely locked in to the American attempt to contain China militarily. In other words, we're an additional resource, marginally useful, I think. I mean, anything that takes the economic burden off America is useful. But more importantly, we, as I said earlier, we are in the position of an expendable proxy now. If America wants to send a signal to China, sorry, if China wants to send a signal to America of its resolve without actually hitting American mainland, what better target than Australia?
Well, China said on AUKUS it demonstrates British, American, Australian, for the sake of their own geopolitical interests, complete disregard for the concerns of the international community and are walking further and further down the path of error and danger. And I should say, Professor Jenny Hocking, who helped the world understand the Gough Whitlam saga and how he was removed, is asking for an apology for the now King Charles, because the papers have been released about the British government's involvement, let alone the CIA's, in the overthrow or replacement of Gough Whitlam. Any idea, you think, amongst foreign policy makers, perhaps in NATO countries, that as poverty increases in Australia, people will start to ask why hundreds of billions, we don't know how many billions, is going to be spent on buying American and British nuclear submarines to perhaps attack China while people at home are hungry?
That discussion's starting, but most Australians really shut out of mind the social tensions that are beginning to appear in Australia. There's still this assumption of, if you like, complacent prosperity in Australia. There's a feeling that somehow or other we're immune from the world's problems. People aren't prepared, for example, to believe that our skyrocketing energy prices that are playing havoc with Australian industry, let alone Australian household budgets, might have anything to do with the energy crisis arising from the war in Ukraine. They think that's far away and somebody else's problem. It's actually very, very much directly connected to the increase in energy prices in Australia, which can easily be shown.
Ambassador, I'll stop you there. More from Australian senior diplomat Tony Kevin after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with former Australian government advisor and ambassador to Poland and Cambodia, Tony Kevin. You're talking about energy prices. I mean, the fact that the Americans can threaten Australian politicians if they don't fulfil their obligations to as vassal state status, as it were. What, they could threaten an attack like Nord Stream? I mean, you think that Cy Hirsch, who's people can watch our interview with him recently after he wrote on his Substack about the eco-terror attack by Joe Biden, you believe Joe Biden ordered that attack on the Nord Stream?
Absolutely. I have no doubt whatsoever. Who was it who said it's more dangerous to be an American friend than to be an American enemy? Somebody famous said it. We have this disbelief that America could do such things. We're brought up on this Hollywood image of, you know, America, the good, the true, and the beautiful. We don't really understand how America is going through the most acute social and psychological and economic stresses at the moment, and which will continue for some years to come. Very, very painful adjustment to no longer being the world's unilateral hegemon. We want to stay in America's corner for as long as possible. I'm talking about the generality of Australian public thinking. We're not a very critical ally. We're a very credulous ally, really.
But of course, all this trade is going on with China. A lot of people talking about de-dollarization. Could that be the move in Australian political circles as they realize that they're having to do more and more trade in Chinese currency rather than US dollars? Is that the factor?
I think for most people that's fairly technical. As long as we can go on, you know, selling adequate quantities of our produce, our mineral and agricultural produce to China, I think there's an assumption that ways will be found around that. It's a very complacent country. I don't think it's a country that feels under threat from China, not yet anyway. And I think China finds it really puzzling to know how to deal with Australia because, as you yourself have said, it's illogical. When they are our biggest partner, our biggest economic partner, why are we going out of our way to antagonise them, as we have been doing for a number of years now?
Do you think the AUKUS deal will really actually happen, given it's so long term, people talking 20, 30 years' time, and people often, even in the United States think tanks, funded by the Pentagon, saying the world will look very different in 20 to 30 years' time if already GDP by purchasing power parity is led by China, and China will be the superpower, and perhaps there will be less bond buying in the United States, and the dollar will be less used around the Global South and Shanghai Cooperation Organization countries, let alone BRICS?
The part of the AUKUS deal that involves the building of nuclear submarines that Australia will own and crew is a very long way off, and that may never happen. I think what will happen rather more quickly is the basing of American nuclear submarines in Australia, with maybe some token training programs with a few Australian sailors going on board them for cruises and so forth to learn which way the toilets are on the submarine, that kind of thing. But it won't be serious. It'll effectively be an American basing of their nuclear submarines, maybe in Perth, maybe in Darwin, and immediately, of course, making those cities higher on the list of nuclear targets than they would otherwise be. So that part of it could happen quite soon. And of course, the flow of money from Australia to America to build the wretched things to help keep the American submarines visiting here meanwhile, that could happen quite soon.
Even though poverty is increasing in Australia, back at home, I mean, as regards Ukraine, how is it being reported in Australia? Standard vassal state terms, the Russia suddenly, unprovoked, decided to invade the largest country in Europe?
Absolutely. Standard vassal state narrative. Perhaps peppered a little bit by the memory of the shoot-down of MH17, the Malaysian airliner, over the war zone in eastern Ukraine. In the first year of...
That was the Russians. We heard on this program one of the people supporting US policy said.
Well, the approved Western narrative is that it was the Russians. I personally don't believe it. I believe it was the Ukrainian shootdown, perhaps intended to cast blame on the Russians. Ukrainians are very good at mounting false narratives intended to blame Russia. And the Bucha massacre wasn't a Russian massacre, it was a Ukrainian massacre. The Mariupol theatre bombing wasn't a Russian bombing, it was an Azov battalion Ukrainian blowing up of a theatre in which they had instructed hundreds of local people to shelter in the basement with the full intention of blowing up the theatre over them and killing them in the basement. The Ukrainian regime, the Kiev regime, is ruthless with the lives of its Russian-speaking citizens and former citizens, because they don't regard them as really Ukrainian. They're the intervention of Ukraine.
Well, as you know, Zelensky clearly denies that, and all those journalists who declared victory in Libya and Iraq, etc., and their progeny in so-called mainstream media in NATO countries reject all of that. They say it's all Russia's fault. Could China preemptively, I mean, some people in the Communist Party of China attack Xi Jinping and previous leaders for not acting sooner against the necklace of bases that surround China today. Could they act preemptively against Australia and try other means to stop in 20 years' time, the threat of nuclear missiles being stationed more permanently and more officially in Australia that are targeting Beijing or Shanghai?
If we were extremely foolish and provocative, yes, they could. But I'm hoping that there would be enough common sense in Australia to know the danger signals if we were going down that road. We have never been so hooked to such a dangerous ally. Malcolm Fraser, our originally very conservative and very anti-Russian prime minister, who saw the light after he retired, as quite a few Australian politicians do, wrote a book called Dangerous Ally on just this theme, how dangerous Australia, the US alliance is, and what little in the way of evidence it actually offers to Australia.
Yeah, it's always after they serve in office they write the books that show us a very different side to what is going on in this alleged vassal state. Julian Assange has been on this programme. He's currently, according to the UN Special Rapporteur, who's now left, Nils Meltzer, people can see those interviews where he's talked about British alleged torture of Julian Assange, an Australian citizen and perhaps the most famous journalist in the world. What is Albanese doing to get him freed? He says he's personally advocating for him, but no signs of London freeing him from this maximum security prison in Belmarsh?
No sign of practical improvement in Julian's condition whatsoever. And we're now compounding this by allowing an Australian citizen, a former American citizen and pilot in the American Air Force, who's been an Australian citizen for about 20 years, to be pulled out of his quiet life in country New South Wales, his wife and children, six children, plucked into a maximum security prison in a 2x4 metre cell, awaiting extradition to America.
This is another case.
Another case, a man called Daniel Duggan, who isn't nearly as well known, of course, as Julian Assange, but it's a pretty poignant case because the person who thought he'd left his American citizenship behind relied on the protection of Australian citizenship to then find himself 20 years later caught up in this nightmare is rather horrible.
Obviously not as famous a case as Julian Assange. Why do you think the Australian government and authorities and secret services and perhaps the CIA controllers behind it aren't attacking you? You were a senior diplomat. You were advising on foreign policy in previous decades. Crucially, an ambassador to Poland back then during the Cold War. Do you find yourself in attack or is it by omission? Do they just not invite you on television programmes to try and keep what you say from the Australian public?
There has certainly been an attempt to make me a non-person, to publicly silence my voice in Australia. It's a long time since I've worked for the Australian government. I retired in 1998, so that's 25 years ago.
But no other diplomats that you worked with share your views and current ambassadors of the diplomatic... I mean, maybe you're not in touch with them. They don't share your worry for the future of Australia if it continues to tie itself to Washington, a declining power as considered by many analysts even within the United States.
Quite a few do share my concerns, but they tend to compartmentalise. I tend to be a big-picture man. Most of my colleagues tend to think of America as a decent country that occasionally makes mistakes and does the wrong thing. I see a pattern of imperial hegemonic behaviour, and I've also committed the cardinal sin of going over to the other side. I've come to the conclusion that Russia, which was my country of first posting, is basically a decent country and an admirable country in many ways. That its leader is one of the most effective leaders in the world. The other one is Chairman Xi. So I'm probably way beyond the pale. But there are a great many colleagues, former colleagues, who on specifics will share my views, yes.
Well, if Australia, if Canberra continues to dutifully support Antony Blinken and the so-called former Clinton, former Obama advisors advising him on foreign policy, What will happen to countries like Indonesia, Malaysia, your regional countries that all seem to be turning, as you just said, to the idea that a new century is born, and China, Russia, these are major powers of this century amidst the declining economic and geopolitically failing United States of America?
Well, the countries of the region put their faith in the only international order we have, which is the one that was negotiated after World War II, the United Nations and Security Council-based international order. They admire Russia and China for steadfastly standing by that UN-based order, despite, incidentally, the manifest corruption of so many UN agencies by the United States over recent years. I mean, organizations like the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Warfare have become worthless. So many UN agencies have become corrupted by American power, American bribery, American threats to key personnel. But if you go back to the central organ of the United Nations, the UN Security Council, the Russians and Chinese continue to speak resolutely to the protocols and philosophies of that council. America, on the other hand, is the rogue state that is trying to subvert the council's protocols and rules. Now, Asian countries are sticklers for good order and good protocol, and they can see this. So can African countries, so can Latin American countries. Poor benighted Australia doesn't follow foreign affairs closely enough to be able to see it yet, but we will.
Ambassador, thank you. And that's it for the show. And remember, Going Underground is broadcasting twice a week, every Saturday and Monday. So stay tuned. Meanwhile, you can keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.